ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Linney.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for us humans and the best thing that we could do for the environment as well.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Leilani Munter, a race car driver and environmental activist. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
The LA Times reports that a woman described as a princess in the Romanian royal family was arrested in Oregon as part of a sweep of a cockfighting ring that allegedly held derbies staged by her and her husband at their ranch. Irina Walker and her husband, John Wesley Walker, were among 18 people indicted and arrested in Oregon and Washington on charges connected to cockfighting as well as operating an illegal gambling operation. The Swiss-born Irina Walker is the middle daughter of King Michael I and Queen Anne of Romania. The royal family still owns four castles in the former Soviet bloc country. Her father abdicated the throne in 1947, and the country is now run democratically by elected officials. In the statement released by the U.S. Attorney General for Oregon, cockfighting was called a barbaric practice that is illegal in all 50 states. According to the prosecutors, the birds with knives or other sharp instruments attached to their legs were pitted against each other in a fight to the death as spectators watched. There was even a concession stand where food and drinks were sold. The fight doesn't end until one of the gamecocks is killed or refuses to continue. And if not killed during the fight, the losing rooster is almost always killed after the fight. Prosecutors allege that 10 such fights were held on Walker's Oregon property, located near the Washington state border. Walker and her husband were charged along with four others of operating an illegal gambling business in addition to charges of conducting unlawful cockfighting ventures, and all 18 are set to be arraigned in federal court in Washington and Oregon. If convicted on all counts, Walker and her husband could face several years of prison time and millions of dollars in fines and would have to forfeit the property where the fights were held.
In a groundbreaking end to its false advertising lawsuit against New York-based Hudson Valley Foie Gras, the Animal Legal Defense Fund, or ALDF, is celebrating the company's decision to stop advertising its products as humane. ALDF has voluntarily dismissed its lawsuit after Hudson Valley Foie Gras, the largest foie gras producer in the nation, removed all references to humane foie gras from its website in late July 2013. ALDF's lawsuit contended that Hudson Valley Foie Gras was violating the federal Lanham Act and California's false advertising and unfair competition laws by claiming to be the humane choice, while force-feeding massive amounts of grain to ducks to produce the swollen livers marketed as foie gras. The case set a new precedent that both animal protection organizations and companies marketing legitimately humane alternatives to cruelly produced products have legal standing to sue producers of animal products for false advertising. But why aren't force-fed products humane? Avian pathologists agree that force-fed foie gras production can never be humane and note that force-feeding can cause an excruciating liver disease and can lead to respiratory disease, seizure, and death. Hudson Valley foie gras products are produced by force-feeding young ducks with massive amounts of grain to produce livers eight or more times the size of a healthy liver, a procedure described by agriculture industry expert Temple Grandin as highly questionable from an animal welfare standpoint. Co-plaintiff with ALDF in the lawsuit was Ella Nemkova, whose company, The Regal Vegan, produces a humane plant-based alternative called foie gras. The lawsuit contended that Hudson Valley's marketing tactics unfairly encouraged consumers to purchase force-fed foie gras over cruelty-free products like the Regal Vegans. For more information about this major victory for consumers and legitimate humane companies, visit ALDF.org.
Obesity expert Dr. Louis Aron told Forbes in an interview last week that the standard American diet is damaging our brains. He cited several new studies that provide the answers to why some people just can't lose weight, all of which point to damage to our brain signals that regulate metabolism and appetite. Dr. Aron is the author of a book entitled The Skinny, on losing weight without being hungry, And he's explained that based on new research, you can actually change your brain, damaging the paths in the section of the brain that control your metabolism when you follow the typical American diet of too much fat, too much sugar, and an overload of simple carbohydrates. Because of this damage, the signals don't get through about how much fat is stored. The signals are lost about how full a person feels, causing constant feelings of hunger. The good news is that in studies earlier this year at the University of Liverpool, researchers found that switching to a diet rich in vegetables and fruits can stop and even reverse the neurological damage done by an unhealthy diet.
Stay with us. Coming up next is a conversation with Leilani Munter, public speaker, accomplished writer, race car driver, and environmental activist. She's the fourth woman in history to race in the Indy Pro Series, and in 2012, raced at Daytona with the first ever Ocean Awareness race car. That's next on ACT Radio. Joining us now on ACT Radio, Leilani Munter. Thanks for joining us, Leilani.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Leilani, can we start by having you tell our listeners a little bit about how you became vegan?
So my background is in biology, and I've always just really been an animal lover. And when I was a kid, I went vegetarian pretty much when I found out what meat was and understood that I was actually eating a fed animal when I was eating meat. Kind of horrified me, and then I became vegan a couple of years ago, you know, just kind of took the commitment to the next level when I learned more about the dairy farming, and you know, there's so many reasons to be vegan. I mean, for me, it's primarily animal rights and animal cruelty, but there's also a lot of environmental reasons. Eating meat and dairy products is really, really hard on our environment. There's a lot of pollution associated, a lot more carbon emissions, more greenhouse gas emissions actually go into the atmosphere from raising animals from food than the entire transportation sector combined. So that's another good reason. And of course, there's a lot of people that do it for health reasons.
So it's more environmentally correct to be a vegan race car driver than to be a meat-eating horseback rider?
Absolutely.
So how did you come into race car driving?
So my degree is in biology from the University of California in San Diego, and I've always been a little bit of an adrenaline junkie. You know, I like to scuba dive and snowboard and, you know, do things that kind of get my blood pumping, jump out of airplanes, things like that. And I got behind the wheel of a race car at a racing school, really just as a bucket list kind of thing. And I happened to be the fastest car on the track that day, and I was also the only woman. And there was a race team owner there from a local NASCAR division that just came over and started a conversation and kind of encouraged me to work on developing my talents and trying to go racing professionally, and sort of planted the seed, and that was 13 years ago.
So tell us about the kind of issues you bring and how you use your car in these races to promote our message.
Yeah, you know, I partner with companies that are doing green things and doing good things for the environment. So I've worked with wind power companies and solar powered companies and LED lighting. I ran a clean energy race car a couple of years ago with a group called Operation Free. That's a group of veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan that are trying to educate Americans that our $1 billion a day habit on foreign oil is a national security threat to our country. I've run the Cove car, was my most recent race car. The Cove, if you haven't heard of it, is a fantastic documentary. That's the first movie in history to sweep all of the Guild Awards. It won over 100 awards globally, including the Academy Award. And it exposes this the dolphin captivity industry and its tie to the dolphin slaughter that takes place in Taiji, Japan, every year. And I got really involved with the star activist of that film, Rick O'Berry. After I saw the film, I started going to Taiji to record the dolphin slaughter there. And eventually we lit up the Empire State Building to raise awareness for what was going on in Japan. And it was kind of there in New York when Rick O'Berry and Luis Ojuez, who's the director of The Cove, and myself were there to light up the Empire State Building. And, you know, we just started talking about really the need to get this movie in front of people who are buying tickets to dolphin parks and more mainstream America, because I think, you know, a lot of people in the environmental world had heard of and seen The Cove. A lot of people who care about the ocean and the environment were already sort of on board. And really, if you want to move the needle on an issue, you need to not be preaching to the choir. You know, I don't need to go and talk to a bunch of people who have already seen The Cove or already kind of get where I'm coming from. You really need to take it out to people that aren't on board yet and, you know, probably haven't seen the movie. So I approached Luis Ojuez and asked him if he would be willing to donate 1,000 DVDs of The Cove to give away to the race fans at Daytona.
Oh, neat.
As we were able to raise the funds to go to the race, and Rick O'Berry agreed to also fly into the race, and we ended up raising the money in about 6 weeks, and I had Rick O'Berry and Luis Ojuez sitting right next to me when I was signing my driver cards for the race fans, and they were signing DVDs of The Cove and giving it away. And so that's really, you know, the sort of basis of my entire program is really getting out and talking to people who don't agree with you or aren't on board yet. Because if you just run around talking to people who already believe in the same things that you do, then who's going to change the minds of those who don't?
Well, that seems to be a great lead-in, because I'm sure you get a lot of flack for race car driving not being exactly the best for the environment and, you know, requiring a lot of fossil fuels. So is that, you know, is that really part of your message, is just trying to find inroads with people who really wouldn't be exposed to these issues?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the reality is if I quit racing and started racing bicycles instead of race cars, I wouldn't be taking a race car off of the track. There's going to be 43 race cars start Daytona in February, regardless of if I'm sitting behind the wheel or not. You know, and likely it won't be somebody who, since 2007, I adopt an acre of rainforest for every race that I run, and, you know, of course, have been promoting environmental messages and awareness on my car for years. So I think that's an important sort of thing to note is, you know, by driving the race car, I'm not adding a race car to the track. I'd simply be replaced by a different driver. There's always going to be a full set of cars at Daytona. And it's really the race car that gives me a voice to talk to 75 million race fans about clean energy and about ocean acidification and climate change and, you know,
dolphin
going
slaughter.
Vegan. If I didn't have a race car and I was just a biology graduate from UCSD trying to get people to give up meat on Monday, you know, nobody would really hear me. Without the race car, I don't have nearly the voice that I have with the race car.
That's true.
I think you picked the right audience, because I mean, NASCAR is huge.
Yeah, it's the number one spectator sport in America. It's number two on television, second only to the NFL. More people tune in to watch racing than watch baseball, basketball, and hockey combined. So if you want to reach a lot of people, it's a great place to go.
Do racing venues have vegan hot dogs and things like that yet? I know it's been a movement that's catching on at a lot of baseball parks.
Yeah, unfortunately, I haven't seen any veggie burgers or vegan hot dogs at NASCAR races just yet. But we're working to change that. I have been working on putting together what I call my Veg Nation race car, which is a car that will promote the vegan diet and how it's a win-win for you know, whether it be for your health or for the animals we share our planet with or for our environment, that, you know, it's a good thing all around, no matter what your reason is for being vegan. And we wanted to go beyond just having a race car, but to also have a big display at the racetrack with a vegan chef cooking really tasty vegan food to show the race fans that, you know, just because I'm vegan doesn't mean I live off of celery sticks and carrots.
I guess you'll have to be serving, like, barbecue or something, huh? I don't know what race fans usually eat, but it seems like they're probably into, like Greg said, hamburger, hot dogs, and barbecue. I've never.
Yeah, I mean, it's your typical, it's the typical kind of food that you see at most sporting events.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Stadium food,
you know,
yeah.
Fast food kind of stuff. You're going to see, you know, hamburgers, so we'll have veggie burgers instead. We'll have, you know, maybe some vegan sausages, and show them that they can, you know, really get that same kind of flavor and taste that they're looking for and that they're used to at the racetrack, and not kill any animals in the process or pollute the environment or pollute their arteries.
So let me see if I've got this right. Your race car is also going to be a vegan food truck?
Well, not the actual race car, but we would love to have a big tent set up and have some really awesome vegan chef. We haven't quite put the funding together to make this a reality. You know, I need to find the vegan companies that are willing to come on board to make it happen. But I'm hopeful that I'll have something put together by next year.
How many races do you usually participate in a year, Leilani?
You know, I'm pretty picky about who I work with. So I haven't even been on track at all this year. Last year, I ran at Daytona, and that was the Cove car that was funded by donations. I mean, there's been years where I've run, you know, 30 races, but that's usually in a situation where I have a full-time sponsorship. On the level that I'm racing at now, it's about $100,000 a race for me
wow.
to run.
Yeah.
So oftentimes working with wind power companies and solar power companies, you know, they don't have enough to sometimes even go to one race. The first time I ran Daytona, I had six environmental companies all kind of pool their money to be able to get the car on the track because none of them had the $100,000 that it took to put the car there. I've walked away from a lot of multi-million dollar deals that would have had me on the track full time, but were companies that are not doing great things for our environment. So I'm holding out and hopeful that, you know, I'll be able to partner with companies and really promote things that I believe in instead of things that I don't.
Well, like, to get on the track at Daytona, it's not just a matter of having the money. You have to qualify, too, right?
Yeah, well, I've raced at Daytona several times, and I've qualified every time. So it's a matter of raising the money is really the biggest obstacle. And then you show up, and, yeah, hopefully you turn a couple of laps quick enough to be in the top 43 race cars. But so far, I've never had a problem doing that.
I suggest emailing Bill Gates. He's been promoting a plant-based diet recently.
Or Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
Well, if anybody has his email, feel free to email him and tell him there's a vegan race car driver looking to get a hold of him.
Hey, I heard he has Twitter now, so maybe you could tweet him and say, "Hey, Bill." Yeah, because really, you're right. You know, it is a great way to reach out to a new audience, and I think it's a real lost opportunity every time your car isn't on that track.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's been a tough decision. You know, it was tough watching Daytona from my couch this year and actually looking at a race car going around the track that I turned down racing because I didn't agree with the environmental stance of the company. And I've actually had companies that aren't even associated with fossil fuels. You know, I have kind of a rule book that I give to marketing people that want to help me find sponsorship, and it's, you know, no fossil fuels, which means no coal, no oil, and no natural gas, and of course, no animal testing, and no meat or dairy products. And most people at that point laugh and say, good luck with that. And, you know, you just kind of killed 98% of the clients in my marketing company. You know, so it's been very difficult. But I've actually had, interestingly enough, even companies that aren't affiliated, their products are not affiliated with fossil fuels and or meat products or testing on animals or anything like that. But I have had companies approach me that said, you know, we love what you do, we love that you're green, we love your lifestyle, but we need you to step back from fighting against big oil. Because I actively go to Washington, D.C. and lobby for clean energy. And, you know, I would like to see us eliminate the fossil fuel subsidies and invest that money into clean, renewable energy. And, yeah, even though their company wasn't affiliated at all, they were willing to step up for a full-time sponsorship for me, but only if I would muzzle my vocal criticism of the big oil companies. And I had just gotten back from the BP oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico, so obviously I said no.
Yeah, really, that's interesting that they... Even though they're not directly associated with it, they have such a vested interest in it. Yeah. What about like Tesla motor cars? I mean, they must have a lot of money, right?
You know, Tesla is a new car company, although obviously they've had some amazing success, and I'm actually a Tesla owner, anxiously awaiting the delivery of my Model S. They only started turning a profit this year. It's a pretty big, it's a big accomplishment to build a car company that's going to rival the big three. And, so I don't see Tesla as a, you know, publicly traded company. I don't see them investing in racing anytime soon. I think their priority is where it should be, which is getting a supercharging network out to, across America and throughout the world, where we can charge our Teslas at, you know, it takes like 30 minutes for us to get like a 200, 300 mile charge on our cars. So it's, it makes electric car travel very convenient to drive across the country. So I think they're going to be spending a lot of the next, you know, year and a half to 2 years putting in that supercharging network and also just trying to keep up with the demand. You know, the Tesla Model S has won every award under the sun. It's the first car in history to win Motor Trend Car of the Year by unanimous vote, and it just got a higher than perfect rating by the Safety Administration on their crash test. So they scored 5.4 out of 5 stars.
Wow.
They actually, when they were trying to cave in the roof of the Model S, it actually broke the machine and the Model S roof stayed intact.
So, well, that sounds like a great car for a race car driver.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible car, and I'm proud to be a soon to be owner. I guess I'm an owner already, but the car is still out in California. I'll be here in a couple of weeks.
Well, I was out in California, and one of my colleagues had an electric car, and they plugged it into a Christmas tree light thing that somebody had, like decorating their yard with like little Christmas tree lights, and they just plugged their car right into that and let it charge while we were at our meeting, and then it was done when we got out. It was pretty cool. I was like, wow, you could just plug into any outlet, and I don't remember what brand of car that was, but electric cars are really coming along.
Yeah. I mean, you can do that with the Tesla as well. It's a much slower charge. The Teslas are the only ones that can use the supercharger network because they're the only ones with the technology to be able to take a charge that quickly.
Hmm.
But it's really kind of an amazing thing. You know, not only can you get a full charge in 30 minutes, which, you know, I was on a road trip and I used the supercharger, and you know, you pull in, you go inside, you get something to eat, you use the restroom, you grab a drink, you come back out, and you have another 300 miles worth of range. So it's pretty convenient.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. But on
cool.
top of that, they've also started battery swapping. So if you are in a rush and you're trying to get somewhere quickly, they can actually swap out the Model S battery in 90 seconds. You don't even get out of your car. You just pull up onto a pad and a robot pulls out your old battery, puts in your new battery, and 90 seconds later, you drive off with 300 more miles of charge.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty incredible technology and kind of changing I think, the face of electric cars for the world, because that's always been the thing that, you know, the naysayers would say, well, you know, it doesn't have long enough of a range and you can't charge it quick enough. And all of those things, Tesla's kind of, you know, changing. They're saying, okay, well, here's a supercharger network. And within 12 months, 98% of the U.S. and Canadian population will have access to a supercharger. And if you want to change out your battery in 90 seconds, you can do that, too.
Well, Leilani, it's really great that you're so committed to your cause and, you know, stay on the couch until you find the right sponsors. And, you know, here at AFT Radio, we'll try to do everything we can to help promote your choices to people that we interview on the show, because it's really important that you do stick to your gun. So that's great.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I need all the vegan brands that are listening to give me a ring. We want to pool a bunch of vegan brands together to get the car to happen, because none of them have gigantic budgets. But but if you pull a bunch of the smaller ones together, I think we could pull it off.
And Leilani, where can our listeners go to learn more about your accomplishments and what you're hoping to do?
Oh, thanks for asking. My website is carbonfreegirl.com. And that'll link from there. You know, I really communicate a lot with the race fans through my Twitter and my Facebook, and it links all to that, to those different accounts right from my main page there, and, you know, keeps people up to date on any sort of speeches or things that I've got going on. So, hopefully some of the vegan brands will get in touch.
We've been talking with Leilani Munter, race car driver, vegan, environmental activist.
Thanks so much for joining us, Leilani. It's really amazing to hear about your work.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me on, and thanks for being vegan, guys.
Sure. If you'd like to learn more about a plant-based diet, please visit the Vegetarian Society of El Paso's webpage at vsep.org and see about the activities we've got coming up in the near future.
If you'd like to listen to past shows of Animal Concerns of Texas, you can find them at ktep.org. Just click on the Listen button.
And special thanks to our producer, Norma Martinez. I'm Tom Linney.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Liz Walsh. For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.
Hey, the red cat bull is going to heaven with my hand below. Hey, the red cat bull is going to heaven with my hand below. Cause a woman I'm loving, she's far on down the road. Well, I know my baby, she's about to jump and shout. I know my baby, she's about to jump and shout. When the bus roll up on magic, I'm running out. I'll ride, ride, ride. I won't roll, roll, roll. I won't ride, ride, ride. I won't roll, roll, roll. I'll find my baby, there my heavy load. Ride my letter, gonna meet it in the air. I'll ride my letter, gonna meet it in the air. You know, got me a woman somewhere. Well, I know my baby, she about to love her son. I know my baby, she about to love her son. Gonna throw arms around me like a sack on around the sun. I'm gonna ride, ride, ride. I won't roll, roll, roll. I won't ride, ride, ride.